The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Chilly start to this Tuesday morning, December 3rd. Average temperature is about 45 degrees if you look throughout the area. Highs today of about 60 degrees. That's going to be later on this afternoon. 68 tomorrow, 66 Thursday, and then got a chance for showers tomorrow and Thursday. Friday highs of only 54, 62 Saturday, and it warms a little bit by Sunday. Tyler Bridges joins us right now, who is our friend, staff writer with Times Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, author of several books, Five Laterals and a Trombone, among them, about the ending of the Cal-Stanford game. And you would think, how can you write a book about one play? But I'll be doggone if Tyler didn't do it. You can get all these at tylerbridges.com. The Flight, A Father's War, A Son's Search, Long Shot, which he co-wrote with Jeremy Alford about John Bell Edwards' win, and The Rise and Fall of David Duke, the definitive, really, biography of David Duke. I like reading your stuff, Tyler, and I'm a fan. How you doing? Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Tommy.
Let's talk about the special session. I don't know how you want to present it. If you want to start with what it was billed to do and what it actually did, or the machinery behind it with Jeff Landry. Let's start with the machinery behind it. Let's talk about from the time it gaveled in, November the 19th, I think it was.
They gaveled in on November 6th, which was the day after
right.
the election.
Yes. So let's talk about that, if you will. Tyler, take us from that moment to what the governor wanted to do and the maneuvering that went on behind the scenes to get what he did finally get. And then we'll talk about what it accomplished.
Yeah, I think the first thing to say about Jeff Landry is he's not a guy just trying to nibble around the edges. He's really trying to make transformative changes to Louisiana, whether you like them or not. So on November 6th, he gave a speech to the joint legislative session that began this special session that he called on taxes, and his plan was to end the graduated individual income tax with a flat tax rate of 3%, to eliminate what's called the corporate franchise tax, which is a tax on the net worth of companies that are big companies, also flatten out the corporate income tax, and he said he would offset the individual income tax cuts for the wealthy by tripling the standard deduction for individual filers. And he had to find a way to pay for all this because all of this would cost well over $1 billion. And in Louisiana, the state has to balance the budget every year. It's not like the federal government where you can print money. So he would offset that by raising sales taxes. And the governor has a two-thirds majority in the House and the Senate, and that's the number of votes or the margin that's needed to pass tax legislation. And then the House eagerly passed the income tax cuts, but when it came to the sales tax increase, it barely got through the House, which indicated to the governor that he was going to need the support of Democrats and to offset some Republicans who might vote against it. So that was the challenge that Governor Landry and also Cameron Henry, the Senate president, a Republican, that they faced when the bill passed from over the House over to the Senate side.
So when it comes to what the governor said it was going to do, his tax reform plan was going to do, and when you look at the tail of the tape at the end, what kind of compromises were made and how did it change from when it first? And look, that's part of the political process, right? I'm not trying to be negative about this or anything. You never get everything you want. Talk about, if you will, Tyler, where it started and where it ended up.
So on the individual income tax, he got what he wanted, which he's everybody is going to now pay. Individuals will pay a flat 3% on their individual income tax on taxes. And again, there will be a tripling of the standard deduction to offset those taxes. And corporate tax, corporate income taxes will be the top rate has been 7.5%. Will go down to 5.5%. So he mostly got what he wanted there. Now the governor wanted to renew a temporary sales tax at 4.45%. The House said, no, that's too high. Let's go down to 4%. And because the House and the Senate refused to go along with the taxing of services, the governor had to make up the money somehow to be able to pay for the individual income tax cuts. And he did that with the Senate and then the House going along that sales taxes will be higher instead of a state sales tax of 4% or 4.5%. It's now going to be 5%. Louisiana already had the highest combined local and state sales tax in the country, and now it will be even higher. Maybe people don't realize this, but when you pay sales taxes, you pay both local sales taxes and state sales taxes. And Louisiana has very high local sales taxes to offset the low property taxes that the state has. So the governor wanted to have this big tax cut of individual income taxes. He had to pay for it for somehow. Legislators wouldn't go along with raising a lot of money by taxing services like lawn care, people getting tattoos, car wash, things like that. So then the offset was to raise the sales tax even higher in the state. So it's a tax swap from income taxes to sales taxes, and sales taxes, as you know, Tommy, are regressive, meaning that the poor pay a higher percentage of their income in sales taxes than the wealthy. So under the governor's plan, according to the analysis that I reported in a long story I wrote in Sunday's newspaper, people who are wealthy will get a big tax cut, and people at the lowest 20% income bracket will actually pay slightly more under the governor's plan.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back because I want to talk about it's a moving target, right? About what the tax foundation and where Louisiana is going to rank and is going to make it more business friendly. My initial concern, Tyler, going into this was, you know, as soon as you start to eliminate carve-outs and special exemptions, those that are getting the carve-outs and the special exemptions, well, they got them because they had some political power to begin with or some influence, and they're not going to be happy about them going away. And do you wind up with a even more complex system or maybe not? Don't just shift some things over and you move some special interest around and you don't really do away with them? We'll talk about all that when we come back. Tyler Bridges wrote the story. Jeff Landry's tax package was in jeopardy. Here's how he and Cameron saved it. Cameron Henry saved it. It's a great read. It's not going to take you that long, and it'll explain to you everything that's going on. Very well written. 721 traffic now, WWL. 726 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Tyler Bridges. You can get his books at tylerbridges.com. Be a nice Christmas gift, actually, a signed copy of some of these books. Staff writer at Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, author of those books I was telling you about. And if you're a political junkie, man, I'm telling you, it's good reading. Let's talk about the way it turned out with what was in the plan going in, Tyler, and I was talking about special exemptions and carve-outs. Did anything really change, or did stuff just get moved around?
No, that's a great question, Tommy. Some things did happen. I think that the tax reformers would say for the better by eliminating some tax exemptions. But the starting point is that Louisiana has a huge number of tax carve-outs and tax exemptions that special interests have gotten that are in the tax code. And what happens is when you give money away like that, then you have to raise rates to make up make up for the lost revenue. So that's why Louisiana has had higher sales tax rate and also individual and corporate income tax rates because of all the tax breaks that are given. So what Governor Landry with Secretary of Revenue Richard Nelson wanted to do was to lower rates, and to do that by eliminating tax breaks. And indeed, that happened in some areas. For example, companies that have been receiving something called the inventory tax credit, they're going to lose that. And also there's some other changes that were made, some other various tax exemptions be changed. The two big ones that the governor and Secretary Nelson wanted to eliminate are the tax break that go to movie producers and also to developers of historic buildings. Now, each industry says they are the greatest thing since sliced bread. There's a lot of jobs that are created under those two programs, but independent studies show that they're a very inefficient way use of government spending that costs the taxpayers a lot more to create those jobs and have that investment. But those each one of those industries, the film producers and the historic property tax credit people, they have very strong lobbies, and so they will. Those two industries will continue to get the tax breaks, although at a lower amount than what they've been receiving.
So, when it comes to the governor saying that it's going to keep people from leaving, it's going to make Louisiana more business friendly, and even quoted an organization, the Tax Foundation. What did they say about the results of the special session?
The government's basic argument, Tommy, is that for Louisiana to grow at the rate of other states in the South, the state needs to lower income taxes and even move towards eliminating the individual income tax, which is the situation in Florida and also in Texas. But to do that, again, you got to raise the money elsewhere. And the governor's argument is if we can raise taxes, reduce taxes, particularly on the wealthy and in big companies, that they're going to invest money and everybody's boat will rise. Now, as I pointed out in the story I wrote Sunday, median family income, which is a good way to see how the state is doing under John Bel Edwards, actually grew at the same rate as the country over the last 8 years. Where the state has not done well, did not do well under John Bel Edwards, was the state lost population. The state was growing, creating jobs under John Bel Edwards. Now, the Governor Landry says, hey, I've got a better plan, cut taxes, particularly that will benefit the wealthy. Now, there's an entity in Washington called the Tax Foundation, and they have something called the State Tax Business Climate. And until now, Louisiana has had the 40th out of, you know, the 40th out of 50 in the country under this tax climate. And the governor said, hey, if you pass my plan, legislature will go up to 8, which would be, you know, a great thing. It will make Louisiana seem like a great place to invest. Well, after it went through the legislative process and they kept the various tax breaks, including the tax breaks for the film producers and the developers of historic properties, Louisiana is now going to 26. So has been 40th, could have gone as high as 8th under this ranking if the legislature had passed the governor's full plan. Instead, it's number 26. But the governor's going to call this a win and say that people are going to invest in the state and create jobs, and the state's heading in the right direction.
Thank you, Tyler. Appreciate your time. As always, minute late, time for WWL First News. 7:46, 14 till 8. College football season over? Oh, no, I don't think so. Obviously, you got the playoffs, you got the bowl season, but you also have early signing period and recruiting and everything else that goes on constantly, really. And now in this day and age with name, image, likeness, transfer portal, I don't even begin to understand how all that happens. Zach Nagy joins us now, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. How you doing, Zach?
Doing good this morning. It's certainly a busy time.
You know, I was talking to Jeff Palermo yesterday, and he mentioned Brian Kelly's political experience. And for those that don't know, he actually worked on a little bit of Gary Hart's campaign tangentially. How do you say that word? Do you know how you say that word, Zach? Tangentially?
I do not know how to say that word.
Well,
no.
We'll figure it out. We'll get the boys in the truck to figure it out. Anyway, he has some political background. And his press conference kind of was, I guess, a political speech as it relates to name, image, likeness, transfer portal, and recruiting, was it not?
It was. Look, for the most part, Brian Kelly's ready to get aggressive in the transfer portal, and it's about time. Last year, they saved up some funds. They didn't get as aggressive in either window. There's two of them. There's in December, and then there's a spring portal window, and they weren't as aggressive in either one. So you're losing 8 defensive starters this offseason, and it's time for them to go out and make some significant changes, and it looks like he's ready to do just that. They're going to hit the portal with force, get some guys in that area, utilize their funds there. And then you also got to worry about locking in this 2025 recruiting class. You're down to the wire right now. It's crunch time with the early signing period, less than 24 hours away. So all eyes are on how Brian Kelly and this coaching staff utilize the funds that they have. First off, it's about getting this 2025 class locked in, and it's about hitting the portal with force and locking in some defensive pieces.
So let's start with early signing period, the real signing day. At what point is somebody bound, and at what point are they not? Because Bryce Underwood obviously was not bound other by anything than $10 million or $12 million, whatever it was.
Yeah, Bryce Underwood certainly got the payday that that Michigan promised that he would receive, made that decision to flip, and now with the early signing period here, these guys put pen to paper here, and they're quote-unquote contractually bound with the program. So you sit back, you wait until these guys put pen to paper, and once that's done, it's official. That'll start tomorrow morning at around 7 a.m. local time, where these guys will start putting pen to paper and making their decisions. But it's certainly a big prime time moment for Brian Kelly and company to lock down some five stars, start to get the talent rolling back into Baton Rouge, because after an 8-4 season, Tommy, that's obviously not the standard in Baton Rouge. So get these guys to put pen to paper, and you're trending in the right direction.
So when it comes to pen to paper, and I don't want to get, you know, I don't make this law 101, but has name, image, and likeness changed anything as far as the legal commitment that a recruit makes now when he signs a contract?
Yeah, no, once you put pen to paper, you're pretty much bound with the school. Obviously, if things happen from a coaching perspective and other things with other programs, you can try to get out of your NLI, your National Letter of Intent, and try to move on from there. But once you put pen to paper, you're pretty much sound in with that program.
And I didn't mean to conflate NLI with NIL, but with NIL, there is consideration, right? And you are signing a contract to get paid in, or receive remuneration for something that you're providing. And I just wonder if it's any less flexible than it was before. Or is that part of what you sign with the National Letter of Intent?
Yeah, no, once you put pen to paper, you're pretty much bound with that program.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll pick it up, talk about some actual recruits when we come back with Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. What happens now is as important as what happens on the field on Saturday nights or afternoons at Tiger Stadium. 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56, Tommy Tucker, WWL, 4 till 8, talking to Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. Tomorrow is, tell me what tomorrow is, Zach? I'm confused.
Tomorrow's early signing period, Tommy.
Early signing period, right. And that is a bound commitment. That's binding, correct?
Yes, indeed.
It is, okay. Let's talk about who is pretty much in the fold and who's on the bubble.
Yeah, so you're looking at couple of five stars that are virtually locked into the program right now. Looks like they're going to put pen to paper, and it starts with Harlan Berry, New Orleans native. He goes to St. Martin's Episcopal right down the road from many of the people in the New Orleans area, and he's the number one running back in America. This is a guy that is a program-changing prospect, committed to LSU on January 3rd, and it's a player that can come in and make an impact instantly. He's versatile. He's explosive. He's fun to watch. Dominated the prep scene in New Orleans, and now he's ready to put pen to paper, sign that dotted line, and become bound to LSU and get down to campus. It's a big-time commitment for this program, and position coach Frank Wilson has certainly done his due diligence here. So it's a really exciting signing for this program. And then you kind of look at a guy that is not necessarily on the fence here, but a guy that people are going to be waiting until he signs that line, and that's DJ Pickett, number one cornerback in America, a five-star out of the Sunshine State in Florida. So you're going to sit back and wait to see what he does. The Miami Hurricanes are surging down the stretch, but LSU ultimately got the last face-to-face visit, made his way to Baton Rouge on Friday, stayed until Sunday evening, and it was a beneficial visit from people that I spoke with. It sounds like he's pretty much locked into LSU, but like we've talked about before, you just never know what happens in this wild, wild west of NIL. People can come out and throw money your way and sway your opinion and sway where you want to go in the blink of an eye. So DJ Pickett will certainly be one to watch down the stretch, but if LSU can lock down his signature, man, you're getting an immediate impact guy who can step in the mix and really take over this program sooner rather than later. So those are two five stars to keep tabs on, and it's certainly going to be a busy stretch over these next 24 hours while LSU gets these guys signed.
Tell me about Cade Phillips.
Yeah, Cade Phillips, five-star cornerback out of Texas, and he's a player that LSU flipped from the Texas Longhorns in August. Corey Raymond and company did their due diligence there, made sure to get him flipped their way, but the Texas Longhorns are still in the mix. There's still dialogue between both camps. I've spoke to Cabe last week, and he reiterated his commitment to LSU, where he wants to sign with the program. But, again, it's the last 24 hours. Teams and programs have money that they're willing to shell out. I think the Texas Longhorns are going to continue swinging kind of for the fences until the clock hits zero. But LSU has continued contact, continued dialogue with him. Both sides feel comfortable with where they're at. We'll see if the Longhorns can throw out an offer that he can't pass up. But Cade Phillips is one of the more versatile defensive backs in the country, truly a player that can step in and make an impact. And you saw your LSU defensive backfield struggle in 2024. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the DBU standard that we're accustomed to in Baton Rouge. So you look at a guy like DJ Pickett, and you look at a guy like Cade Phillips. Those are two of the top cornerbacks in the country, both a pair of five stars. If you can get both them to sign that dotted line, you're looking at immediate impact players on day one once they enroll on campus.
Be interesting to see. Watch it unfold. Thank you. I appreciate your time, Zach, and the info. Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. It ain't like it used to be, I'll tell you that. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Ronald Surpass and J.P. Morrell in the next hour about crime in the city and more. Back in a flash, WWL.